I know normally this is really good, but I'm just hungry. Last time I ate was breakfast.
Damn, have a granola or something.
You have to have it closer. Yeah.
You should have like a granola bar or something in your pocket.
I'm picky about granola bars now. I got tired of eating those Nutravalley ones or Nature Valley ones, and it's like, it tastes like cardboard.
Switch your stuff up, man.
Cliff bars are alright, but sometimes they're like, I feel like I have too much sugar too.
They're super sugary. And I can say that because they didn't sponsor us this year.
Alright, so what's up, everybody? That was me eating chips. Special. What is this? What do I call it? We're not in the studio, so I have a word for it. There's a word for like being out.
On location.
Yeah, kind of like that. Podcast on location at Las Perlas in downtown LA. If you've never been to Las Perlas, it's right across from Kohl's. Don't go to Kohl's. That place is expensive. They're overrated.
But it's owned by the same people, so.
Is it?
It is. It's Juwantara Hospitality.
Oh, shit.
So don't give too much credit.
Well, all right. To each their own. But we're here, and I'm here with the homie, Areli. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, everybody. This is Areli Morales. Yeah, that's me.
So more than anything, thank you for taking the time to want to do this with me. Because I know we all live busy lives and we got other stuff to do. That's why I got this mobile set up. So you can just come to a bar and eat and chill.
I'm doing it for the salsa and the drinks for sure.
Yeah, and we got a quesadilla coming on the way. I think somebody's having like a going away party or something. Anyway. So, Areli works here in downtown. And you commute to Long Beach. That is a commute.
Yeah, every day. Blue Line when it's available. Bike to Blue Line. Walk to Blue Line. Scooter to Blue Line. Normally, right now, I'm doing the shuttle. Right now, I'm doing the shuttle because of the construction.
Yeah.
Which is... It kind of makes me feel like Cinderella. Like, I can't...
Because you got to get home by a certain time?
Because I can't be out past 7. Or it's going to take me 2 hours to get home.
Oh, my God. No, without, like, the shuttle construction... Without the shuttles and the construction that's going on this year, how... Normally, what would that commute look like for you?
It's pretty easy because I live in downtown Long Beach. And I work in downtown LA. So, I mean, it's just literally, like... From my stop on 7th and Figueroa to 7th and Spring, which if for you people who don't live in LA, is only like 3 blocks, maybe 4.
Yeah, and usually you got like something in between to help you get there. Like right now you're rolling on your skateboard.
Yeah, hell yeah. It's all about multimodality. I get bored. Like I'm doing my skateboard right now because I don't trust, you know, leaving my bike out in downtown LA, to be very, very fucking honest. I'm sorry, am I allowed to curse? I didn't mean to.
This is the internet. You can do whatever you want.
Vamos, pues.
That's why I don't, like, formalize this show. I want to keep it like that. I can say whatever I want, no matter how problematic it is. But, okay. So, where did you end up growing up?
So, I grew up in Venice, and Venice Beach, in the Oakwood neighborhood of Venice Beach, which is the harder... place to grow up. The historically redline black community.
Okay.
If for those who don't know, Venice was built by like the Southern blacks, and then they weren't allowed to live.
During the Great Migration?
During the Great Migration, like during the construction in 1907.
Oh, we can have it. They put the wrong food.
Hey, it is ours. Quesadilla.
Yeah,
thank you. Okay. No, so during the Great Migration and the building of Venice was a marshland that was constructed into a series of canals that was supposed to be like the Coney Island of the West Coast.
Really?
Yeah, it was created that way, definitely. And thankfully, I mean, it's got its issues, but. But mainly, like, people of color, Black, Indigenous, and then later, with Mexican migration, my people lived in Oakwood. So like, there's actually a big migration pattern from following the Bracero program, where like my grandparents in the 50s came to the United States and you know, as farmers. And then after that, some people stayed, and we ended up in on the west side. I come from a city, pueblo, Catlacolula, Oaxaca, in southern Mexico. And there's, I don't know, growing up, for me, like, it felt like I lived in Venice, but I meant, like, it was culturally Oaxaca. Like, I knew it. I was like, damn. And my mom, like, to this day, she'd be like, oh, ¿de dónde es tu familia? ¿Dónde vives? Ah, no, I got you. You're from Del Valle, you're from Tachila, like, you're in Culver City? Oh, you're for sure.
They know where you're repping.
You know your regions, you know? Like, and that's cool, because, I mean, the Oaxaca were such a, like, community-based community. So, I mean, when we migrated, people migrated close to their family.
Of course.
Close to their networks, you know, like... My dad came here when he was 14, and he had his cousins and his friends from El Pueblo, like, get him into a job, and that's how he ended up, and that's how we ended up in Venice.
Wow. Man, that trips me out. But then, it's circumstantial part of it, too, being that age, and it's such a different time, too. I mean, some things would have been easier, but I immediately think that a lot of things would have been a lot worse.
I mean, his options were stay in Oaxaca, where he was a farmer, and, like, maybe build canastas, you know, and just farm. And those weren't really options back then, right?
Yeah.
Like, farmland became scarce when, like, open trading happened. And so, like, it completely changed the form of life.
Napa.
So now you're out there trying to make a living. And honestly, like... Being poor, you're going to stay poor. Like, in Oaxaca, there wasn't very many options.
Upward mobility,
so,
no
yeah, there was no upward mobility. So, your college days are literally coming to the United States. It's, like, the same experience.
Wow. That's a good way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, because I think even with me and, like, for other folks, because, you know, when you hear Venice, the first thing you think of is, like, the boardwalk and, like, all of that stuff and Abbott Kidney. And to me, I automatically think of the movie White Man Can't Jump.
Which is true.
That's one of my all-time favorite, like, L.A. movies. Just because they go everywhere. Well, not everywhere, but enough.
And that's very interesting because, like, that section, the basketball court, is, like, a sacred, like, it's holy land in Venice.
I think they did a American History X there,
American
too.
American History X,
with
too.
Edward Norton.
And, I mean, like, there was the revolving door to prisons. Like, mm-hmm. So the handball courts were, like, where everybody grew up because it's just, like, something that you continue doing. My brother still loves the handball courts.
Damn, I can't get on it. It's like, ah, my hand. I need these to type. And then I think for more other folks, it would be through the skateboarding scene. So, like, Dogtown and Z-Boys with all them who's... I mean, if you haven't seen the movie, it's worth seeing. But, and then for another selected group of folks, suicidal tendencies.
Okay, so all of that is accurate. Like, all of that is the way we grew up, like, with Dogtown, with suicidals.
That's part of it, yeah.
That's part of it. The interesting thing is, like, there's... I knew that Venice was a unique place to live because you don't have the white gangs everywhere else in LA. Like, right?
The white dudes that look like cholos?
Yeah, exactly. And even, like, growing up, like, I saw... That suicidal culture was still prevalent, you know? Like, I mean, I grew up... Like, I was in middle school when The Lords of Dogtown came out. And so, like, it was like...
Everybody was on it.
Woo, it was crazy. But even then, like, Suicidal Tendencies is everybody's favorite band, you know? Like,
still one of my favorite bands.
I fucking love them. Like, my brother, who claims he's harder than I am, like, is like, oh, yeah, he used to go to, like, all those shows and shit. Like, he is harder than I am, but...
I got this black guy there.
Yeah, like, well, tell me about all that. I was a little bit sheltered from all of that culture, you know, rightly so, like, the only woman.
Gender norms,
blah, blah, blah. But,
wait, are
like,
you,
curiously, you know?
You don't have any, like, But you have siblings, no?
I only have one older brother and myself.
Oh, okay. So one and one.
One and one.
Wow.
Yep.
That is so much more different, yeah.
Yeah, it's completely different.
Yep. It's like, no, aquí te quedas en la casa and you're going to cook some beans. Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Well, not really. Like, I don't know. Like, I knew equality wasn't equal, like, since I was, like, in second grade. I remember, like, protesting that stuff. And I remember, like, protesting my grandma, who would be like, tú te vas a poner a lavar los trastes porque eres mujer. And I'd be like,
shit.
Oh, hell no, grandma. I remember that. I was like, mira ese huevón en el sofá. Like, if he's not going to get up to do a dish, I'm not going to get up and do a dish. And that's why my mom and dad raised two very lazy people.
All right, then it's equal.
It's equal.
Nobody's doing anything.
Exactly. To this day.
Really? Did your dad end up meeting your mom when after he moved here?
So, back in the day, there was no, like, real wall. Like, it was just fluid. So, my dad used to, you know, now hip with his, like, parachute pants. Like, my mom told me that. She, like, fell in love with him in his parachute pants.
Wow. That was the thing.
Would go back to Oaxaca. And, like, on one of these trips, he went to, like, a dance with one of his friends. And his girl brought her girl, which was my mom, and
ya
estamos. I want to say it was a Tigres del Norte concert, something like that, for real.
So him being here, kind of establishing himself a little bit, having a job, having a little kind of that kind of money to go back home and flex on everybody.
Oh yeah, he had a little, you know, exotic about him. Like,
ooh, ya viene del Norte, yeah. That is so funny.
That's how it works, dude.
So then she's like, hey, like, take me to the north with you?
I mean, like, shit, without dishing my family, shit. No, like, machismo is fucked up.
Yeah,
and I'm really happy that my family and my parents are so transparent with me and telling me that. No, my dad was like, oh, we have a kid. We live there. He lived there with my brother. My brother was born there. He lived there with my brother and my mom for a while. And then he's like, later, dip. He dipped on her. And then my mom was like, fuck that. She came. She came on her own. Exactly.
It's like, I'm here.
I'm here. No, but my grandpa, on my mom's side, he came here during the Bracero program and he stayed. So he actually grew up, he lived in East LA his whole life, basically.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, with my grandma. My grandma and my grandpa on my mom's side lived in East LA, actually, next to Evergreen Cemetery.
No way.
Yeah.
Was it the same situation where, like, somebody put him onto that? Like, hey, there's, like, good getting over here.
I think it was more like a bunch of other braceros stayed. So, like, I can make money here. Because back there, and he's like, what, sell atole and, like, sell pan? Like, there was no upward mobility there either. So, being here in El Norte, he worked really hard at, like, he washed cars.
That's
yeah,
not
for
easy.
Like years. Yeah, he washed cars, and then like he managed to like generate enough wealth to purchase a home for everybody. All his three daughters and his one son.
Oh, he bought everybody a home.
He bought everybody a piece of
land.
Wow, isn't that cool? He was like, "Fuck this, my daughters are gonna be secure," and I mean, I'm still benefiting from that. So. Shout out to grandpas who take care of their fucking daughters.
That's kind of rare to hear, unfortunately.
I know. It really, it like losing him was like a really hard loss. And actually, like, he died in Boyle Heights from street violence.
Oh shit!
When I say street violence, people think like, oh shit, he got shot down. That was in the 90s. But no, he got hit by a high speed chase. Like, he was crossing legally.
Oh damn!
Yeah, that shit was crazy.
When did it happen?
I was like one, but it's still like so it's, I'm like 29 now, so it was like 28 years ago. Yeah.
Right, it's a hard loss because it's unexpected.
It was a really hard loss. Like, my grandma's still recuperating, you know? It's not, yeah.
Fucking people and I'm driving.
I know, but like, I mean, like, again, like, my family being so open with it, with everything that's happened to us, like, that really set something in me, and I think it's like a major force to my like mobility justice and like you know, social justice type of, you know, activities I get into now.
We'll get into that bike advocacy. But when you were younger, I think at least traditionally, most folks learn to ride a bike when they're a kid. Was that a similar experience for you?
Yeah, we would walk around like the neighborhood, and my dad taught me how to ride bikes. Yeah, my dad is actually a cyclist. In Oaxaca, him and his brothers were racers.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. There's some really sweet pictures of my tios with, like, a mountain of their trophies in their little, like, Carrizo house. Which is just, like, it's really cool.
Dang. Were they doing it for fun? Were they serious about it?
Oh, like, no, they were serious. They were competing. Yeah, oh, wow. They were competing in the Pueblo.
I kind of want, were there paved roads?
The answer is no.
Like, this is like all dirt roads.
I mean, no, okay, so like the main road that goes from the city of Oaxaca to my hometown, which is the Valle, like it's an interstate, the Interstate 90.
Okay.
So that's been there for a year. So they did a lot of routes through there. But everything else was dirt. On those road bikes, too, you got some skill.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, there's a fucking bus. There's a difference between, like, having a mountain bike with, like, tires for, like, off-road riding and, like, the skinnier, slimmer, very thin, high-pressure road bikes that are, like, meant for speed and pavement.
Which you can feel every single bump.
Yeah, it hurts my butt just thinking about it.
For me, it's my wrist. Like, it always is like,
uh-huh. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot goes into that because depending on your position of your hands at the handlebars and even to an extent the kind of handlebars you have and how you're situated with the brakes. I mean, with me over the years, it's put pressure on my wrist, and depending what kind of handlebars I'm using, like if I use the bar ones that like are usually seen on mountain bikes, it hurts my shoulders. So like I have to switch positions like every 10 minutes from like having it in front of me where like it looks like I'm like clawing to kind of like moving it over to the right or to the left depending on the handlebars, you know, to kind of like spread it out. So yeah, it's kind of like, what is it, repetitive stress syndrome?
I guess so. Like, I've been riding road bikes since I was like 14 because of my dad. So
did you try to get you into like racing too?
No. He was never like that serious. It was more like a form of transportation. Okay. You know, let him sleep. Because, you know, instead of giving me rides everywhere, he's just like,
here's your bike.
Here's your bike.
aside from like balance and riding and braking and like a lot of fundamental things like that, did he show you other things to be like how to be safe? In terms of like what we would teach in a class,
no.
Like hand signals, how to like, you know, look out for traffic.
No, he taught me to like how to like change my tire and like and patch my tires.
The very fundamental things.
But none of that on the road stuff, because it's different. Like when you're racing, like the course is set. Like it's not.
You're safe. It's to an extent, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, or even when he was riding around in Oaxaca and like in our hometown, he was just like, you know, like everything's slow.
It is.
So it's not the same. Like you don't have to deal with the same amount of traffic at the same speed. So it's something foreign for him too. I think I have to teach him that.
Like street riding, basically.
Street riding.
Urban riding. Let's go bust a wheelie on that pothole. Watch out for the car making a right hook.
For real.
Shit.
All of that shit.
Damn. So did you grow up most of your life in Venice until like you decided to leave home?
Yeah, so I grew up all of my life in Venice.
How was that, like seeing it change? Because I'm sure you must have seen it change, right?
Fuck, I saw it change. So like right before my eyes, like I remember, because I grew up in this apartment building, like four apartments in like one building, and then
that's
like
pretty small.
Yeah, it's intimate. I know. I still know everybody in like in there. Like the owner of the building is like my madrina. Like if it wasn't for her, we would have been kicked out. Fucking
wow.
Like, woo.
That's like a good connection.
12 years ago, if not 16. You know, so I remember that happening when I was in high school, like middle school, high school, the whole displacement and gentrification before we had a word for it.
But you see it happening.
Oh, fuck yeah, I saw it happening. Mainly, like, I saw it through my brother and his experiences because, I mean, he was harassed by the police constantly. And, like, now talking about it, like, the police did some fucked up shit to him. Like, taking his phone, like, having him as, like, he was marked as one of, like, in the gang in judgment. And just being associated to him, like, I was also, I'm sure I still am. You know, like, fuck. He got, like, the police would stop him as, like, a, like, 10th grader or, like, 9th grader.
This sounds like...
And grab his shit, his phone, go through his phone, use his phone to, like, identify pictures of his homies and then go after them. Like, they would do some, like,
it
really
sounds like
illegal
LAPD,
shit.
Like, gang, crash unit shit.
That's exactly it. That's exactly what it was. Like, so I saw all of that. And so, like, that was the first step. Like, gang injection was the first step to, like, displacement, right?
Yeah.
So, like, people now feel unsafe. They don't want their kids there. Like, shit that I had to see, like, was insane, like, growing up sometimes.
Just passing by the neighborhood and you're like always see the cops walking with somebody?
Always. A bunch of SWAT teams in the different apartment buildings.
You know, that makes me think of Point Break.
Yeah, basically. Like helicopters. Yeah, shit was crazy. And then like the worst part was like I was close to everybody in like my building, but we were also close to the building like facing ours.
It's a community, like
it's
you
a
said.
Community.
Yeah.
And so like I knew everybody there, like like the people on the top were like, they would take care of us in their after school programs and
wow.
And there was like another neighbor from Oaxaca. They were from another town called Tachila, and they was like I grew up with like the kids, right? So then my brother and
everybody more or less was like the same age.
I mean, once they were displaced, like their like whole life, like that whole family was completely torn apart. Like it's still really harsh for them.
Damn.
Like, and I saw that through them. Like, one of them got deported, and then, like, the mom was in another, like, was forced to go into an abusive relationship, and, you know, just for housing, and, I mean, shit just went, like, spiraling, and that's just
like,
the people
that
I know, and, like, those are the people that, like, I have stories for. Like, that is thing, all of that happened throughout our community.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, and it's very sad to say that I think for most of us, or whoever's hearing this, like, we've probably seen that kind of, like, trauma and maybe even experienced it ourselves. And along with a bunch of other trauma that we have, it's, like, it's normalized. They're like, yeah, that's just the way it is. So I'm not surprised that's happening. Or, like, yeah, I guess it's their turn now to go through that kind of messed up thing, you know? But you kind of, like, rationalize it.
No, it's crazy. And I feel like it's, like, the ultimate gentrification because maybe in your hood, like an apartment building was taken over. They, like, did a manita de gato, like my dad says, and they just, like, you know, painted it over and, like, rented it up.
I call that a Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, exactly, Mickey Mouse. Like, renting it for, like, twice the cost of the old tenants. We have multi-million-dollar homes right next to my apartment building, you know? It's, like, it's insane, like...
They're just waiting for you to leave so they can tear it down and do that.
That's exactly what they're trying to do. But we ain't leaving. Don Juanito, stay alive. Another 10 years, please.
We're controlling death.
Exactly. Nah.
Do you think that maybe y'all wouldn't have formed the same type of, like, intimate relationship everybody in the neighborhood did if it wasn't for, like, everybody being Oaxacan?
I don't think it's just Oaxacan. There's other, like, Mexicans.
Okay.
And
just like everybody
other,
being in solidarity.
It was definitely a solidarity.
We're all
the
broke.
Oaxacan thing was insane because of how culture, like, the culture's so, like, I don't know. It's community-based. It's intense. We have a lot of traditions. And so...
Oh, yeah. Y'all get down.
We get down. And so, like, all the parties were just, like,
come
you know,
on over.
Blasting and come on over. And like our parties aren't one day. They're like 3 days minimum. So it was a different time. It was a beautiful place to grow up. Now like people will call the cops if I have a mariachi going. You know,
that
shit happened to me once. I'm like, what the fuck?
Really?
Right? But at the same time, like one of the houses next door is like a venue sometimes. Or like I've been to my mom's house and there's like loud-ass rock music, and I want to be, like, calling the cops on them. And when I want to, they, like, turn it off by 11, but, like, not that I'm that girl.
I was like, damn. It's like my neighbors are trying to flex. And I say flex. Because,
yeah.
Like you said, if somebody's having a party and they're getting in down with a band, normally that would happen on a Friday or Saturday.
Yeah.
But I say it's a flex because they were doing it on a Monday. I was like, I gotta go to work tomorrow.
That is a flex. You're right.
It's like, I don't care if it's your son's birthday.
Shit. But Juanito only turns 3 once.
I'm sure he does. That's why you got like a bunch of like 12 packs, like 12 cases of Modelo and shit.
You know about diesels.
Yeah. Damn. So, you graduated. Where did you go to high school?
I went to Venice High School.
Yeah.
Venice Senior High is actually
the name.
How was
that for you?
Like, looking back at it, it was magical.
You say Venice, and I'm like, for some reason, I automatically think, like, it's a movie.
It kind of feels like a movie now that I'm out of it. Like, for sure. It was really nice. I mean, I'm very fortunate in that, like, I was in honors classes and AP classes, so I wasn't, like, you know, one of the forgotten, because there's so many of them. Like, in the public school system, it's really bad.
I chose to be forgotten, and I took advantage of that. No. Oh, you're back there? You're one of the quiet kids that doesn't give me trouble? You get a gift grade. Aww. Here's your gift. It's a B. Get out of here.
No, I mean, like, I'm a super active kid. My parents told me, like, to stay out of trouble, and so I got into trouble with music classes.
Why?
And, like, marching band, and, like, just... Shit, like, this.
Were you, like, playing Black Sabbath or what?
Shit, like, were you there? Like,
is that what you
2008? 2008, shout out Mr. Burstein, our music teacher, who...
I mean, I know it's bad, but it can't
no,
be
it
so
was.
Strict
okay, so my music...
You can't play certain music.
No, my music teacher, and the reason I'm, like, super, like, I think it was magical, is a metalhead that wasn't that much older than us. And so, like... Yeah, like his last year of being a teacher, it was also my last year, so we're like, fuck it.
Oh, like first hired, first fired.
Exactly. We're like, fuck it, we're doing, not that. Yeah, I think he decided to go to law school or whatever, but whatever. Hope you're doing well, dude. So he's like, fuck it, we're going to like do an all metal marching band, and that's what we did. So it was amazing. It was a really fun time.
Do you remember what songs y'all played?
Okay, so
most people don't know. I'm a fucking
followed
huge.
By like Ace of Spades, followed by I don't know. It was like 4 different things. It's a little blurry those years, like a lot blurry. But also like through him, like developed a rock band class.
But how do you play like Ace of Spades with the band? That's like super bass driven.
Yeah, it is. I don't
know.
So,
like, is it trumpets going like...
Maybe Ace of Spades we played at rock band class, but I do remember Iron
like,
Man was
like
our...
game?
No, we had 2 different, like, programs through this music teacher.
Okay.
So, like, rock band class was, like, a 7th period, like, you know, like the School of Rock, but, like, for Venice kids.
Come on. Y'all should, like...
Mostly brown people.
At some point, y'all would have played, like, some Suicidal...
Of course. It was a really cool class that, like, we had, like, different groups, and we would all have to, like, perform a song during, like lunchtime.
Football.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. But, like, Marching Band, all I remember right now is Iron Man was the opening song, and I played third bass drum for... Yeah, I don't know. Like, drumline is a shit. And then,
well,
and then I also played
Nick
snare.
That's what Nick kind of made a movie of it.
Yeah, I also played snare. Snare drum. So it's pretty cool.
Wait, which one's the snare drum?
The loud one.
It sounds like marching.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, can you still do the flippy thing with your finger?
No. I could never do it. I honestly never got off probation. But, like, I don't know. I was kind of a teacher's pet.
What did you do to get into probation in the first place?
Not be good enough to like get a full snare drum like position, but being all right enough to promise to practice. No, I was still playing. I just was never like the understanding was I was never good enough, which is okay. I thrive off of mediocrity. Like,
really?
Mediocrity.
You're throwing everybody else off rotation.
No. I didn't get that bad. It wasn't that bad. I just wasn't. I just don't practice. I don't have. No tengo el don de practicar. I just am like meh. I have better
hilarious.
Shit to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's commitment because it's an instrument, so you gotta like commit to it seriously. I never had that kind of commitment.
I just did it for the fun. It was fun. It was
sounds
fun.
Sounds like it. You know, like you were having a blast hanging out with folks, drumming along.
Yeah, and I mean, I was also like in drama and like outdoors club. I was the president of the outdoors club. Like, my parents didn't have the time to like take me to places or like. You know, they were working constantly, so I just threw myself into these activities.
Nice.
And
did that ever become, like, an issue? Because, I mean, for a lot of these extracurricular stuff at schools, at some point you got to, like, pony up. Like, oh, we got to pay for uniforms or we got to pay for this trip or whatever.
No, there was an understanding that we were all poor. And we didn't have to. And I never went into any of the sports or things where you had to pay for uniforms. So, yeah, like...
We're not in a popular activity.
I wasn't in baseball, softball, or cheer or anything like that. That shit's a ridiculous amount of money. I will rent the like fucking instrument and the outfit. That's it.
Okay. Did you ever get into any fights? I want to say because maybe you did.
In high school?
Yeah.
Damn.
Not because like you're like confrontational or like you're looking for violence.
Why you say that?
I was gonna say like because. Maybe you were defending somebody, or you're like standing up for yourself.
No, I mean, as like the quiet nerd in the hood, like you learn to just shut the fuck up. So that was me. I was just like you don't see anything, you don't say anything type of thing, right? Because I had to take the bus home, like from middle school and high school. Usually, this is before I realized that a bicycle was a better form of transportation. By the way, shit, like that was way before that. And like being on those buses was like someone's gonna get into a fight. Just stay out of the
school
way.
School bus or metro?
The big blue bus. The big blue
the
bus.
Santa
too.
Monica bus.
Yeah, they would have a special one for school.
Oh.
For the middle school, like to. Take us from our middle school there. Yeah, no, people would always get in fights there. So, no, I didn't get into a fight, but...
Did anybody try... even me, like, people try picking fights with me for the same reason. I'm, like, a nerd, so it's, like, an easy target.
No, I was a loud nerd. So maybe, I mean, maybe I was more
like,
of a
she's funny. Yeah, she's cool.
And I was just, like... People just avoided me because I was like the wild card. The kid, amigo. Like, you never know what you're gonna get with her.
Wild card, baby. That is such.
This is why nobody dated me in high school.
That is such a perfect way to put it. The wild card. Oh my god. When I don't think I would consider myself a wild card. I'm pretty predictable in, like, the, like, randomness that I do and, like, the crazy shit that I say.
No, I was that student that, like, would try to argue my point with, like, the teacher or, like, you know, gotta fight for your right to party was my anthem in, like, ninth grade. Not that I partied then.
Yeah, but,
but
you
I was
should have a right
to
do it.
Antagonistic. I'm just like, fuck this shit, you know? Like,
was that something that your parents, like, brought up to you? Like stop being so that.
Because
we're getting report cards, they're saying you're like hella loud and shit.
No, like people liked me. I wasn't that. I mean, my parents know how I am. Everybody in my family knows how I am. I'm the one who stands up and gives a lecture to people.
You don't do that. Stop doing that.
Or like, really, Theo? Like, you didn't have time to take your. I wish I had time to take my kids camping. If you spend all your time drinking and having these parties, like, you had the time. Do not give me a mic at a family party.
Damn. Can't hide. You can't hide in front of you.
I mean, I expect people to tell me how it is, and I have. I mean, now I have little cousins who, like, do the same shit, and I'm like, I see how rude that is.
Out?
I see how rude that is. I see. I get it.
I mean, even me, I learned, like, you know, there's a way to say it without just being like a complete ass about it. But being a complete ass is what makes it fun.
I mean, what, the other thing is, like, I'm a female who is expected to be, like, a docile, gentle,
submissive,
and stuff. And the only way that I could, like, you know, fight against it is by just being so assertive that my parents are just like, okay, just leave her alone.
Calmation.
Exactly. Same with all my family. They're just like, okay, just leave her alone. That's been my strategy.
Oh, man. It sounds like it was a lot of fun.
I mean,
it still is. Like, you're still pretty much the same person.
Basically. Except more confident. Like, back then, I was just, like, scared. No. Scared.
Who's going to call me out? Who's going to... Did you go to college after high school?
Yeah, I went to CSUN.
Oh, okay.
It was cool. I'm like the first person to graduate high school in my immediate family, and I'm the first person to go to four-year university straight out of school.
Your parents didn't go to college?
No. My parents didn't graduate high school. You know, neither did my brother. So for me, I was just so confident and assertive because I'm like, the standard is so low. Literally, like, all I had to do to, like, make my parents proud is graduate from high school and not be pregnant by then, you know? Like,
hey, same here.
Accomplish.
Or get pregnant.
And I was just, like, so over it. I'm like, I hope my standards that I hold myself to are way higher than that. So I was just like, whatever.
No, because, I mean, that is that first generation world pressure. Like, do good. That's why we brought you here. So you can go to school and graduate and get a job and you don't have to work as hard as we do.
No, I grew up understanding that, like, I am my parents', like, retirement plan. I am my brother and my cousin, like, from the time I was young, would be like, you're our hope. We're going to live off of you one day. Like, that's why they would protect me and not let people talk to me and shit.
I'm going to cash this in, like, 20 years from now.
And, I mean, I get it. It helped, you know? It helped. So, like, I don't know. I was just like, I understand my responsibilities. Let me just enjoy this discovery period of my life, like, who I am and whatnot. So
that sucks.
It was cool. Like, I went to CSUN because it was just, like, I really had no effort. I was just, like, at that moment of my life in, like, high school, like, I thought I was going to be a musician. I was like, fuck it. Like,
drumline all the way.
Not drumline. I was a singer back then. I was like, oh, yeah.
Were you singing Selena?
I sing Selena now, but back then I was doing, like, more metal and, like, Portishead and shit like that.
Okay. What are some of your favorite metal bands?
Oh, well, shit. Well,
you can go by genre, by, like, who's the oldest, you personally.
I feel maybe, like, I was just, like, in a metalhead, like, existence, but...
Wait, did you dress the part?
No, I never, like, wanted to be, like, formulated in any boxes. No, I was like, you can't put me in a fucking box, you know, like, that's me. So I, like, would hang out with, like, the... I grew up on a steady diet of rock steady and, like, ska, because that's what my cousins...
Because
my cousins in Mexico, they're musicians. They're, like, they have amazing, like, rock steady, like, band, like, first-generation ska band. And I'm like, that's my family. So, like, I grew up with it.
That's different, too. We should say that. That's, like...
That's way different. But, like, here in L.A., like, my friends were all metalheads. So it was... Like, mainly, like, Pantera, Anthrax, like...
All right. The big rotations.
Ones,
yeah.
I mean, I was 17. Like, this is, like, way more than a decade ago. And, I mean, I also did some psychobilly singing. It was just influential.
That's what I love to, like, sing, like, Motorhead. I mean, it's easy.
Motorhead
but...
is fun to sing. It's, like, really fun.
Because there's not a lot of singing.
Yeah, exactly. It's mostly screaming and grunting, which is pretty cool. You know? I did some Alice in Chains, too, like, with...
I love Alice in Chains. Jerry Cantrell, Alice in Chains, by the way.
I mean, I was just trying to find my niche. Really, it was always Selena, though.
Secretly.
Always. Secretly. Not even that, secretly.
Well, for some of
hell
us, secretly.
No.
So we got old enough to own it. I think it was singing it at karaoke... Selena. I'd be like, why is Eric singing Selena? And he's good at it.
Oh, no. I grew up, you know, with a washing machine. Yeah. So, I don't know. It's pretty cool. After that, I, like, started getting to this. Like, I've always had, like, a I don't know why I'm like super depressed or something. I have like this, I really like, I'm a happy person, but I love singing the blues, and like Portishead was my favorite band in high school, you know? So it's just like some sad Radiohead and Portishead, that's my shit. Yeah, no, yeah, you're right. But that's like, that's still my kind of music. That's still the type of shit
I'm feeling all melancholy
about it. Well, something to cry to, you know?
Because there's like different, like, for me, different ones. So there's the go-to that, like, Radiohead, where, like, I'm sad but smart, like, mood. But then there's, like...
Well, because of the complexity of music, right? So, like, I was in AP Music Theory, too. So, like, we would be like, oh, Radiohead, like, the vocal lines are
Which album? Kid A? Okay, Computer?
Okay, so, like, when I was in AP Music Theory, it was when In Rainbows dropped. So, like, we spent, like, the entire time, like, just... deciphering it. Wow. And so that's why I'm like obsessed with it still, you know, like
The one that really like turned me on, like in terms of like, whoa, what am I listening to, was Amnesiac. Because I remember seeing the music video for Pyramid Song. It's like, what the hell is this? Like, what is going? Because I've heard Radiohead before on K-Rock,
but like Pablo Honey, you know?
You know that different. Creep song, and like some of their other hits, like from OK Computer. But I think that that's when, like, I started maturing mentally enough and emotionally enough to, like, really, like, start putting things behind it and be like, oh.
Ooh, I get it. Yeah. It's intense.
That's why I like it. Not just because it sounds good, because I'm also very sad inside.
Yes, exactly. Radiohead always has a way to, like, find everyone's sadness.
You'll bring it out one way or another, whether you want to or not.
Kind of like Chavi La Vargas for me right now.
You have your go-to. Yeah, what did you study at CSUN?
So I started off as a music major because I was still on this whole, like, I'm going to be a musician shit. And then I, like, realized how talented everybody is and how untalented and unmotivated I was. So I switched to recreation and tourism management.
That's a thing?
It's a thing.
Whoa.
I studied leisure, recreation, tourism, with a focus on sustainability. So I grew up half of my time in Oaxaca because it was too ghetto to be in Benin. And my parents weren't going to take care of me.
Was it the you're not in school, so you're going to go over there thing?
Yep. Exactly.
So cheaper. I grew up my...
Yeah, like, you mean I don't have to pay for you or a babysitter? Your grandma's going to do it all?
Bye. Play in the dirt.
Exactly. Bye.
Go eat some grasshoppers.
And that was a good thing for me because the people, my family in Oaxaca are actually like amazing influences. They're like musicians, powerful women, PhDs. Because
I automatically think it's the summer. So it means like there must be some bomb-ass parties happening.
Yeah, there was. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I guess, like, back then I was like, oh, I'm not going to be an alcoholic like the rest of my family. Like, so I've never drink or smoke and shit like that. So I was just, like, all, like, into the, like dancing. Like, I really, like, my mom was a dancer, like, a folkloric dancer.
All right.
In Oaxaca when she was young. And all so, right. like, that shit was instilled in me. So, like, I really love just, like, dancing our traditional music. So I was into that and, like, playing with all of my cousins. Just, like, having the ability, like, to play on the streets to, like, all night was something I'd never experienced.
Crazy, right?
That was really cool. That was really fun.
All right. Let's take a break for, like, a few minutes and get some more booze. Okay. So this is a good quesadilla, even though I got a little cold. We're good on the drinking situation now.
Drinking mezcal margaritas.
Yeah, this is really good. So where did you end up? Where did life take you after college? With a degree in tourism.
Oh, I mean, like, during college, I was always a cyclist, like, from then, right? Like, I started riding when I was 18, so, like...
Did you commute from Venice to Northridge?
The first year, yeah. Like, my dad lost his job, dude, like, taking me to the test. I remember that, like, taking me to, like, the entrance exam, he lost his job. So I was ready to go to San Francisco, but, like, not having any money to do so was, like, all right, well, fuck. You know? So I just stayed home at CSUN, And my dad would take me to the train station, like to the bus station in UCLA every morning, like at 5 in the morning.
Shit.
And like, it would take me 3 hours to get to class at 8 in the morning. And I did that for like a few months before I like got my, before I got in my own place, right?
In, out there in the valley?
Yep, out there in the valley, because it's a crazy commute. Like, I didn't have a car, nor that I wanted to have a car. Honestly, we couldn't afford it.
No.
So that's just what I had to do. And then I, studied abroad in the south of France.
Oh, no,
for a year. Yeah.
That was years?
Fucking cool. 1 year.
One year.
God. 3 years, I would be even more broke than I am right now.
Did you learn any French?
Oh, yeah, no, I have a minor in French because of that. Yeah, I know French. Oh, my favorite part is, like, fucking French people trying to talk shit. And then me being like,
we?
T'as dit quoi? No, like, it's just like seeing this, like, straight out Mexican woman be like, oh, hell no.
I tell you where can stick that crepe.
Honestly, the only reason to study French is to see people like that. Is to, like, see their reactions.
It's a great way to curse.
It's fucking amazing.
Because it just sounds so cool.
Okay, I was about to say something, but
you can. Nobody, I mean, most people, I wouldn't know what you're saying. I don't speak French.
Tagol. You know, like, suce ma bite.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I don't know, like, dude, I think it's just, like, it's crazy. Like, I try to, like, now that I'm, like, older, I, like, try to analyze, like, why did I want to go to France out of all the countries?
Because you wanted to get out of the hood.
I wanted to get out of the hood, and I really wanted to get out of my parents, out of my
especially
mom's
being
control.
At that age, that's a almost universal feeling.
Yeah, I was like, I want to go as far away from everybody I know for a while. Like, and most
yeah,
of my parents.
That was actually one of my questions. It's like, did you get any opportunities, aside from, like, going to Oaxaca to... You know, get out of the hood.
Because that's still family, though. Yeah. Like, those are still the family pressures, right? Like, being in Oaxaca is still a lot of family pressure. And then being in Venice is a lot of family pressure and the community pressure. But, like, being in France, I was like,
nobody knows me here.
I can do whatever the fuck I want, you know? And that's exactly what I did. It was cool. It was a really fun time.
Then where did that end up taking you, though? Like, did you end up... you know, doing something that was related to your degree, or were you just bouncing around?
So after college, I ended up bouncing around. So, like, what I felt was, like, and the reason I went into this degree was, like, I just want to travel for the rest of my life, and this is, like, something that could afford me that. And then I go...
Yo, look at that white woman wearing that, like, that, what is it? It's not a huipil, is it?
A huipil is a full-on dress.
This is a shirt. It's like the top.
Yeah.
How dare she?
Dude, okay, so tell me why that white woman who's right here trying to sell that mezcal is wearing the huipil. I'm not going to say shit now.
Help me.
But whatever.
Get that culture off me.
I mean, at least it looks like she bought it from, you know, like an artesana. You know, like, what bothers me is when you don't even buy it from artesana. You buy it from, like, some white
Placita
woman trying to appropriate, you know, like, fuck.
Because, like... Or, like, Urban Outfitters shit.
Yeah, I know. I mean, because, like, if you buy shit from an artesana, like, that's some, like, real work and labor.
Yeah,
that's a lot of money.
Them.
You are supporting them. Like those, Tijuana dresses are, like, $1,000. That puts people...
American. Oh, shit.
That puts people through, like, I mean, that's supporting that family for, like, a month or two, you know, for real. Anyway, so...
Yeah. I can see that. You wanted to travel.
I wanted to travel until after...
Look at that pudgy dog.
Nice.
He's, like, can barely make it up the hill. He's just getting distracted.
He's trying.
I can't tell what kind of gender.
Look at his tongue. Okay, yeah, he's tired.
It looks like a potato walking.
Oh, man, he's chunky.
That's a chunk. Chunk doggo.
Now, so after that, like, I was, I had a really hard time finding a job, and I worked as a concierge at the mall, and, like, for a while.
Which mall?
Santa Monica Place. Like, growing up in Venice, I, like, grew up. Right. Okay. I was trying to establish myself within the Santa Monica tourism market, they didn't hire my brown ass, so I kept going. And then I was like, what am I doing with my life here? And I applied for a bunch of jobs, and I got a job in Costa Rica for the summertime, like leading adventure tours, which was really, really freaking fun. And it really, like, being in Costa Rica inspired a lot of the ecotourism, like, aspects of my life. Because I've always been, like, a sustainability, like, eco-freak. But seeing brown people be as passionate or even more passionate than I thought I was, and, like, seeing people who are poor but have their basic necessities, you know, education, home, and care about the environment and, like, the people and the animals around them, like, inspired me to, like, want to do something like that for my own Mexican community, right? So, like, I learned from that. And after that, like, I spent, like, 2 summers doing that, and I just bounced around, and, like, I realized, like, there's a... What do you do when summer ends, though? You know? And that was...
You go back to... I mean... That was why, like, I mean,
go back
now.
To your mom's house, you know? Like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, because, I mean, in my current life path, I don't get a break from summer. It's just like, all right, now I get to go to work and be hot and miserable and sweaty. Oh, it's winter now? Okay, now I get to be cold and miserable and sweaty.
But, I mean, the life of an adventure guide is just so fast.
It's so much more different.
It's so fun, but, I mean... I was whitewater rafting, like, down the backwater, you know, like, which is, like, an amazing river. It literally, like, looks like Jurassic Park. And I think they filmed some of it there, but it was like, oh, I'm here, you know, it was amazing. It was amazing. But then I realized, like, so what am I going to do with my life? I'm not making much money. Like, none of my goals are here. So I was traveling around. And
peer pressure's there.
Yeah. I mean, knowing that I have to be, like my parents' retirement fund and all of this shit, like, I was like, okay, well, like, I have to really focus on, you know, building a career, and this is not it. And so, but it inspired me to build a hostel, an eco hostel, because I was traveling through South America and Central America doing all my ecotourism shit to, you know, like, only buses, taking buses, being with the people, only going at, like, to hostels, only doing things that are, like, you know, hiking and, like, helping people, like, buying artisanal things. And I met, like, this really cool young couple in Panama, in Bocas del Toro Island. There's a group of islands that people go to party or snorkel, right? and then, like, there's a second island in Bocas del Toro where, like, half of it is just, like, all of it is just, like, like, people who live there, but half of it is legit just trash. Like, half of the island is just trash. And the other half, there's, like, little eco hostels.
Is that, like, their dump or what?
No, the ocean is the world's dump. So anything that goes into it, it just ends up in these little islands. Like, I did a lot of traveling, like, on sailboats and stuff like that. And, like, literally, like, nobody else is around you, but you get off on an island, and the island is as big as a car, maybe, like, the circumference of a car.
Wow.
Or, like, maybe 2 cars, and there's, like, a bunch of plastic. There was one island that we affectionately called Blue Sandal Island, because there was 3 plastic sandals, like, different kinds and sizes, just, like, ended up there. And
this
it just,
is back then, before, like, things got so much more worse.
Well, this was, like, I want to say, like, 4 years ago, maybe?
Oh, yeah, so we're on our way.
And so, yeah, no, like, seeing this couple who was, like, 30, one of them was Panameña, and the girl was Spanish, so, you know, whatever. But they, like, they built this eco-hostel there, and they're just living in it and trying to, like, clean up the island and trying to do, like, these positive things, you know, because our people need money. Like, nobody's going to, like, my grandma sells Monsanto rice and corn in her little store. Shout out to Miss Eliana, mi tiendita. If you ever gone there. She sells that stuff, you know, and it's heartbreaking, but it's what people want to buy because people are poor, right? Wow. So if you incentivize, like, economic development, sustainable economic development, by giving them money and, like, showing them that there is, like, an income with them, that there is positivity, like, that's how my mind shifted.
Is that, How did you start getting into like the bicycle advocacy aspect of your life?
No, I mean, the bicycle advocacy aspect of my life was just riding a bike in LA and seeing a lot of my friends get hit.
Being back.
Like, I don't have a car. I never really had a car, you know, so... And I know riding buses is terrible. Like, the only thing I wanted to do with my life is not ride a bus ever. Which is why I got a car, like when I was 20. Like, my dad bought me a 92 Honda Civic. First and only car I've ever had. And then it sucked being stuck in traffic and then looking for parking and then, like, not being able to drink and party because you have to, like, drive. And I'm like, this shit sucks. So... But on my bike, I was doing everything, right? And so I was like, "Oh, this is freedom." So I just got rid of it.
That was my biggest thing to bike.
Yeah,
is that level of independence.
Fuck the bus, you know, like, because the way I see it, if you're gonna get stuck in traffic, like, you're still gonna have to make all the stops, and that's the terrible thing.
Except you're just there, like, sharing the misery with a busload full of people.
It's true. On a bike, I can do whatever I want, right? I can go anywhere I want. And so, like, the advocacy started from there, like, seeing how much of a failure L.A. was, right? I would ride everywhere. Like, I've always ridden my bike to work, right? I just saw how Santa Monica actually had some systems in place.
Yeah, yeah.
Everywhere else I didn't have it. And so, like, some of that inspired me to, like, advocate for the things that I needed and for my community, right? Because who else is going to say it? I'm already a loud person.
Nobody. Nobody's going to say it if we don't say
it.
And then if we don't, then somebody else will get paid for it.
I just didn't want to see, like, my friends get hit all the time, right? Like, I saw so many of my friends, like, get into, like, car-related crashes.
Damn.
Like, my homie at CSUN. I have a homie at CSUN. Who was skating in the parking lot at CSUN, and a car hit him. The car ended up suing him. His mom's house was on escrow.
Wow.
Like, that is some fucking car shit.
You hit my car, you're going to fix that. You hit my car with your body.
With your body. And it was his fault because he was riding a skateboard through a parking lot. I mean, there's so many freaking parking lots. Like, there's no other places to go, right?
I mean, like, how fast do you have to be going, too? Like, that you're not supposed to be going that fast in a parking lot.
No, you're not. Exactly. But still, like, this is the way. Those are the type of, like, stories that, like, fueled fire in me. And I'm like, nah, this shit has to change.
You gotta,
like,
do
this
something.
This isn't right. This isn't right. And you know, like, another thing is, like... A lot of my family are, like, undocumented, and so, like, they can't speak up, but I'm not, and I'm like, oh, I can speak up, I can do whatever I want to say, like, try me, right? You have to be that voice.
That's fucking tight. What have been some of, like, your favorite rides? Because I know you've done, like, a lot of the stuff that, like, regular bike riders do in LA, like, so, like, critical mass, like... group rides with, like, you know, folks that, you know, just hang out together all the time. But I think you've also done, like, that LA to, like, Tijuana ride, right? Like, what, I don't remember, what was it called?
Yeah, so my favorite rides growing up, the party rides, the social rides, were West Side Mosey, always so much fun. Family rides, I actually tried to do a do one unsuccessful family ride in Aix-en-Provence, where I was studying in the south of France. It was literally me, like, saying, "A gauche! Me tourne à gauche!" And it was really bad. It was, like, five people who showed up. But, I mean, like, family ride was a cool place.
Was a family ride, though, like, for folks?
Family ride, FMLY. It was a bunch of, like, West Side kids doing, like, these thematic rides where everyone's a family, so you started off with a hug, right?
Oh.
You started the ride with a hug. People wore costumes. They take us to different parts of town. There was always a live band playing or two at one of the stops. You, like, get there and it was like, bah, bah, bah. You know, it was so much fun. It really, like, I really miss that too, because it's like, that's your niche. Like, places in LA aren't that cool, you know? Like,
no,
as cool as the streets.
You got to make your own party.
Exactly.
I think that's what I genuinely enjoyed before the car life. was, and because I was also younger, so I was like, fuck it, I'll go do this like ride today and get fucked up and I'll still go to work tomorrow.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, I never knew my body could do 30 miles in a day.
Right.
Like, I was always like, you never know.
While
when
doing a bunch of other things at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. You always are like, you were surprised in the group mentality, a little fuel in you, a little liquid courage in you. Like, it really goes a long way.
Makes the ride go faster.
It does. It does. So, I mean, and then the Tijuana to LA ride you're talking about is through a more organized group called Sustainable Streets. I'm sorry, Sustainable Cycles. That's a part of Sustainable Streets. One of my good friends, Rachel Horn, she always gets me involved in these crazy, like, volunteer bike organizations.
It's like, I know you're, like, a person I can rely on to
be a good
volunteer.
I know you're down and crazy enough to spend all this time doing this shit. So I am. So, like, Sustainable Streets is a nonprofit who encourages sustainable economic independence for menstruating humans, with a focus on menstruating humans, trying to destigmatize the period, doing workshops throughout the ride, education, you know, like the bike, we call it bicycling because you're cycling.
The last one happened last year, cycling. Right? 2018?
There was one 2018, but this happened, like, I think it was 2017, 2016, where the ride that she did, because I was supposed to join her from L.A., to Mexico City.
Okay.
She did that ride. I was supposed to join her, but I only was able to do the first leg of it.
Like, I got
to
go to work tomorrow, y'all.
Well, I got a job like that same like that same month. I was ready to go, and like all of a sudden, I got a job for like this tech company. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna take that money, you know, and not be broke forever. But that ride was from Santa Monica to LA. It was really, from Santa Monica to Tijuana. And I plan to do more of those.
That's
it's
a good
really
mile.
Fun.
Like, how many miles was that?
I really don't know.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it was a two-day ride.
Oh, so y'all are camping too.
Actually, I think it was a three-day ride because we took it easy. Yeah.
They're like, let's not strain ourselves. Let's just
ride.
No.
We stopped. We enjoyed. I mean, that's what I love a bike tour. And you get to stop and enjoy.
And then last year, you were involved
with
Bike Bike. So, like, tell folks what Bike Bike is.
So, Bike Bike is an international bike conference, all volunteer ran. It's mainly the bike co-ops who get together and kind of share the wealth of knowledge and their experience through workshops. It was a four-day event hosted
rides,
at LA State Historic Park.
Rides.
Like, what are you doing in your neighborhood? It's a bunch of radical people.
And it
really
goes around from, like, city to city.
Yeah, so last year was Tijuana, and 2019 is going to be in LA, so it's going to be hosted at the border.
Here.
Well, so last 2018 was LA.
Yeah.
2019 is going to be Tijuana.
Oh,
and that's
going to happen
at the border. It's actually October 10th to the 13th.
Wow.
It's happening really fast, and it's happening at our compadres on the border call those bici descendientes. The Food Not Bombs people, like, they have a full co-op thing and bicycle shop there now. They're the ones who are hosting it. I'm really excited about it because, like, really, like, bicycles are more than just mobility. They're, like, economic development.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see us building things like VC Máquinas, VC Lavadoras to, like, help people establish.
If you haven't seen any of those, there's ways you can adapt your bicycle to be a blender. You know, or like a couple of different things.
I mean, yeah, all it is engineering. You can make it into a blender. I've seen things that, like, chuck corn, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you can make it into a washing machine.
It's a simple machine.
It's a very simple machine, and it's a fixable machine, and it can give somebody, like, a job, right? Like, it's a powerful tool, and to explain it a little bit more than that. So I'm, like, super interested to see how we can help, especially the refugee population, through bicycle power.
Because I think most of us here living in LA are familiar with it, with, like, street vendors. Because I grew up with them, seeing them, like, yo, there's the dude with, like, the bike and selling whatever he was selling, right?
The elote.
Yeah, or raspados and whatnot. But now that I'm older, and, like, I admire their bikes, I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Dude, you don't have brakes or gears on your bike. You're just like, like they cut up the front of a beach cruiser and then attached it to a trailer. I was like, dang, that's some intense pedaling.
It's being self-sufficient, yeah, though, right?
Then I see, like, I mean, not to hate, but, but you know, then I see, like, people in Portland or, like, in other places where they do this, you know, essentially the same thing. They adapt the bike to be their mode of, like, I'm going to sell this thing that I'm selling. But they're using high-end, specifically built. This is a cargo bike. This is a bike to do this specific task. And it's going to make it easier for you to do it as opposed to, like, I jerry-rigged this and, like, I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean,
usually they buy them.
Yeah, and they're, like, thousands of dollars. Yeah. Like, something that, like, people that are just trying to, like, make a living off of something don't really have.
That's why it's, like, welded together from, like, five different bikes.
Which is something that you should do, right? Like, upcycling and whatnot. Which is, like, it's just a resource that's already there. Like, go to any of the bike co-ops here. There's nothing but, like, bike pieces everywhere.
What are some bike co-ops that are still around? I know there's...
The Bicycle Kitchen. The Microwave on the west side.
Where are they? So Bicycle Kitchen is in, like, Echo Park or Silver Lake?
It's, like, Silver Lake, Los Feliz area. Right. It's off of Los Feliz.
South Sunset.
Yeah, South Sunset. And then the Microwave is...
West Side.
Mar Vista, like, on Venice. I'm a little... We're all afraid that they're going to be bought out because that shit is, gentrifying really fast.
But they've
fast
been there
content.
A while, but
that
still.
That doesn't mean the property owner isn't going to, like...
Get out
of there.
Ride your
right?
bike out of here.
Yeah, take all your tools and go.
What's the one in Highland Park?
The Bicycle Oven?
Yeah.
I mean, I see Chicken Leather, but, like...
I see him, too.
I talk to him, but he doesn't
always go somewhere,
really,
and he's, like, recording.
He always records. But I don't think it's really, like, operating. Yeah, like, all of the bicycle, like, co-op people were the people who were also organizing Bike. Like, that's what it is, right?
Yeah,
so, like,
yeah.
I spent a lot of time with them. And, no, I feel like it's just, they're just trying to, like... assess their inventory, or say, like, get rid of a bunch of shit, and then, you know, work from that. Now it just feels like a storage place.
Yeah, because I haven't heard much from BC Digna either. I passed by. They're on 6th and Bixel in Pico Union, but it's like anything else. It's hard to keep a business running, let alone one that depends on, like, volunteers and donations.
See, like, the only one that's really stable was a Bicycle Kitchen because they own it.
They've been around the longest,
no? But, like, somebody purchased the building for them, so they're not going to be kicked out. They're good.
That's sustainability right
there. That's sustainability, exactly.
And yeah, I mean, any of these places, you can, like, look them up on Facebook. But, like you said, like, I think the Bicycle Kitchen is still one of the most active. They need to have regular programming.
The programming is, like, so what a bicycle co-op, for those people who don't know, is, like, all volunteer-based mechanics who help you and teach you how to fix things on your bikes. Like, you're not a shop that you just drop your bike off and, like, expect a tune-up. They teach you how to do it. And sometimes they fuck up with you. Like, that's a part of the learning
experience.
That's part
of learning, that's for sure.
And then a lot of these have these bike build programs where if you don't have a bike, you can just take all the pieces and they teach you how to, like, build them.
Frankenstein bike.
And then you have a bike all of a sudden. So
you put together yourself. Yep,
it's an empowering thing, and it also gives people transportation, reliable transportation. So, like, this is the reason we, like, you know, work towards these things.
I know that's one thing I really loved about being at BC Digna. It's like, because they started out from a day labor center at Idebska, and it was about that. It was the foundation of, like, jornaleros and day laborers are the ones riding their bike to work out of necessity, and that's one of their main forms of transportation. So let's help them learn how to maintain it or give them a space to, like, do maintenance.
Yeah, and that's really what we need more of.
I mean, I had a lot of good times. Because, you know, you're just also just hanging out at the shop and just shooting the shit with a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. And with now that, like, everybody's purchasing parts on, like, Amazon, like, the bike shop is no longer going to be a thing if we don't support it. So, like, these spaces are necessary. Like, because where else are you going to learn that your bike wasn't put on properly from the homie at Walmart? Surprise, surprise, you can't build a bike.
Well, there's your problem. You bought your bike at Walmart.
Or Target. I'm not just calling
out
Walmart.
It's a good bike. It's a good intro bike.
Or like on Amazon or whatever. Like, you really don't know. Like, it's not a bike mechanic.
Eventually, if you're going to be serious about it, you'll be like, I can't ride this Target bike anymore.
No, not even that. I'm not trying to call people out who purchase their bikes at Target. Like, what I'm saying is that a lot of people don't actually know how to put a bike on, like, or don't know like what, or don't know how high your seat is supposed to be, or like those little things that like bike mechanics have spent years to do. Kind of like how you don't go to a novice person to get a tattoo because it takes years of experience to get that right, you know. That's what we're losing by not supporting our local bike shop. Go on and get your crooked eye tattoo, you know?
You'll get it cheap and
you'll
quick.
You'll get it.
It's like the longevity. I mean, just hope that it'll blur out really fast. And then you have to cover it up.
But I mean, yeah, like that's my like analogy, but okay. You get what you pay for.
And then most recently, you did the climate ride. So what is the climate ride?
So Climate Ride is a like a charity bike ride. I know we're not supposed to use the word charity. Yeah, it's kind of like AIDS life cycle, but it's focused on fundraising for climate-oriented like nonprofits and organizations, which, you know, that there's not a lot of funding for.
I mean, yeah, nonprofits are struggling for money.
Oh, yeah, all the nonprofits are struggling for money. I work for the Los Angeles County Bicycle Coalition right now. And I did it as a part of LACBC because I've been like the program lead for both of the 2 years of Climate Right that I've done. I'm the captain, so I'm the one who tells you where your bus is, where you have to be, like how much you need.
A lot of things.
I coordinate all of it. Yeah, I'm the coordinator. So,
like,
and I'm also writing it, and I'm also in charge of the scholarship money. Like, so we have a fellowship.
Gives
people, yes it is, thank you, which gives people who would otherwise not be able to like fundraise the $3,000 an opportunity to do a ride like
to
that.
To participate,
because it's really fun and it's beautiful. It feels like adult day camp where you're just, all you do is like ride your bike. You get to your location, you set up your tent, you talk to your friends, drink a beer, you know, eat lunch at like food hall, and then you continue going, you know. So it's a lot of people like me, like I'm still struggling to, you know, pay the $3,000 that are required to fundraise, to join one of those.
So
events.
If somebody wanted to help you, how could they help the Arely's Climate Ride Donation Fund?
So you can find my Climate Ride Donation Fund like through any of my social medias. You can also just like Google LACBC and find it. It's pretty easy.
Okay. All right. So I bought Arely drinks out today, so that's my contribution. I'm just kidding.
Thank you, Eric.
That was payment for coming here today.
And I'm enjoying them.
How many miles is the total length from where to where?
So last year was 350 from Eureka to San Francisco. And this year it was 275 from Santa Cruz to San Luis Obispo.
How many are you averaging a day?
Like 60.
Damn, that's a lot. I mean, if you've never... let me just say that riding any kind of miles any time of the day is, it's a struggle in itself, but putting in those kind of miles on a bike, that's a lot of sore butts.
It is, but like I also was in charge of the training series prior to that.
Pictures of like weekend rides to like condition and get ready.
So that's exactly what you have to do. You have to condition your body to do that.
Can't just say like, all right, I'm gonna go do this climate ride and then I'll go to work tomorrow.
No, not at all. You'll be sore for days. Like, so sore. Like, yeah, saddle sores are a real thing.
It is.
They're real. I don't know, but I really loved it because I've never, like, again, like, growing up with my family, we never had time to, like, go camping or do any of that stuff. So being able to just ride my bike for days and camp in parts of California that I've never seen but I've always wanted to see.
Yeah, you took
Big
some
Sur.
Beautiful pictures of, like, your
ride.
Oh,
my gosh, it's so nice. It's
and
really nice.
And that doesn't even translate to what you're seeing.
It's literally the ocean, yourself, your bike, and like green next to you. Like, I literally got to see how the wildflowers transform, like, the closer you get to San Luis Obispo. And was really gorgeous. It was really nice. You know, I'm like such a like environmentally focused sustainability person that, like, for me, it really is about the soil and the plants, like the native plants that we have. And then it was also cool to see, like, one of my, like, friends I was riding with me, she's like, you know this mustard, right? The mustard that you see everywhere? The Spanish threw that out to, like, claim their territory. And I'm like, motherfucking colonizing flowers, right? And so there's a little, like, something I didn't know about before, but now I got to see that in practice, like, 150 years after, like, the Spanish actually did that, they're still there because the mustard plants are an invasive species.
The missions, too?
Oh, well, the missions, like, we stopped by a mission, and I was like, I always go into the missions to purchase their indigenous, like, literature, because some of them have it, you know? Like, who are the people who are actually...
We get kicked out of here.
I'm still the antagonistic person. Like, I have friends who are religious, and I, like, will respect their connection to their grandma or whatever, but I'm not gonna do it with a smile on. I'm going to do it with a grunt and with, like... with an ask for their indigenous literature. Can you please tell me the people who were enslaved by this mission system, the local people? And so, like, that, I did that too. We were in I can't remember which part of the coast we were, but there's a mission there, and I went in there and I did the same thing. I just turned around when I didn't see anything.
Like, peace.
Bye.
Oh, man.
Ask me about my relationship to the church. Ask me.
How did you feel about this year's ride? Like, overall, with, like, you, not like the logistical stuff of planning and taking care of people, but, like, you as a rider and, like, the training you did, and then I think you did the whole thing, right?
I felt, like, a lot stronger this year. Like, I'm a stronger rider.
I think you took a break part of it, or, like, one day or two.
Oh, this year, I still took two breaks from it. Like, I was like, I can just drink coffee and, like...
Chill
and not have to deal with, like, 15 miles of uphill in the middle of nothing. I'm cool. You know, like, I have nothing to prove this year.
So that's, like, real right there, though. You don't have anything
real
to prove.
I'm sorry, I got nothing to prove.
As we see some guy riding a fixie with doing a wheelie down the street.
I know how to brake, stop, and make sure that I'm not, like,
I know how
people
to do a rock dodge.
That's it. Exactly. I actually just became an LCI.
Oh,
too.
No shit.
Like, I have my LCI stuff.
Do you know your number?
I don't know my number.
I'm 4,995.
Damn, it's like some flex with LCI. It's like, what's your number? Like, my coworker Colin, he's like, I'm one of the first. You know? Like,
yeah, you know, he's always an OG. Flex. Shout out to Colin.
Shout out to Colin.
CBC. I was hoping I would get 5,000.
I don't know my LCI number, but I do know that I got it so that I can start teaching people, like my mom and her, like, therapy group, you know? Because, like, señoras need that shit in Spanish. It's empowerment, you know?
You know, I, of all the things you can... Well, I should explain. League Certified Instructor is the title for LCI, and it's given to you by the League of American Cyclists, which is a non-profit organization that works nationwide to certify bike riders to become instructors, you know, through their curriculum. I was able to do it. You said you were just able to do it. And it costs money to get any kind of certification, honestly.
Yeah.
It costs money. So did you get help paying for it?
My job paid for it.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to squeeze this. I was also a woofer when I was a... when I was an outdoor guide, because wilderness first responder, because my job.
Yeah, CPR.
I will always take any certification.
The training. Yeah, because it's a training that happens, like, over 3 days, and it's like 8 hours each day or something.
It was intense, and honestly, I'm going to be... very like real right now. Like it took me months to actually complete it.
Really?
Because I didn't finish, like I didn't practice enough like on my quick stop
and
my quick
turn.
Two of the drills. And my the person who was my instructor is a stickler, right? And so
Was it that older gentleman that's like bald and white?
Ron Durgan was the person who was my instructor.
I think maybe that was the same one as me. Was it here in LA?
Yeah, it was Rio's first. Like when they got certified as an instructor of the instructors.
Instructor of the instructor.
Exactly. And if y'all don't know Rio, they are. They're an amazing person to train you to be
very caring
an instructor.
And very like being patient with you and working with you at your level.
Yeah, like, and they know what they're talking about, right?
Yes.
So
shout out to Rio.
Shout out to Rio.
I don't think she'll ever hear this.
Well, probably not. Anyway,
but yeah, I mean, the reason I did it, I say, you know, the same for you from you. That certification gets you, you know, more leeway when it comes to like getting paid for that kind of work. But then that's the part I enjoy, like you said, you know, you wanted to help your mom and her friends. That's what I enjoy the most, is like doing the bike education classes with folks that, you know, when you share that intimate knowledge of like do's and don'ts about riding your bike and how the law works and all these other responsibilities you have as a person riding your bike, and you see their face like, oh,
I get it now.
That's why I don't ride on the sidewalk or like do this or do that.
And my whole thing is like a bicycle is just a form of empowerment, right?
Yeah.
And so like, why not empower other people, right? And I want to do it in like Spanish because that's like my other language, right?
I do it in Pocho Spanish.
En Pocho Spanish. Ahora van a la right, you know?
A la bicycle.
A la bicycle.
And estos son los brakes.
Exactly,
cuando te pare la police.
And the cool thing about the league, like the reason people get this LCI certification is because insurance. It covers you on insurance. That's honestly it. Like, we live in a litigious state. Like, you gotta cover your ass.
Speaking of which, I got my email saying mine's up. Oh, yeah, because it's every August. It's like when I have to renew it.
There you go. Pay for it now.
Oh, shit. Like, I've been doing it for the last couple of years. Like, when I first got it, I was like LCIing like nothing. Like, it's like
it's
all
also
the time.
A good income, right?
Yeah.
It's a good income for people like us who, like, you don't need to have a college degree for it sometimes. You don't need to have anything, really. You just need to go through the instructing knowledge.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a good transition, too, because you are doing a ride on July 14th.
Yes.
So tell folks what it is.
So July 14th is
Saturday.
A Sunday.
No, it's a Sunday. My bad.
It's a Sunday.
It's
and
next week.
Yes, it's next Sunday.
Sunday.
Get this podcast up. Get it up.
We're recording on the 3rd.
Yeah. Okay. So what it is, it's like a ride that I've always wanted to do. Like, so for me, like, bicycle riding is just another form of educating people. It's just another way of showing them what I see, right? My experience is my perspective.
Literally.
And literally, like, because... Yeah.
You also have done in the past the ride of Venice.
In Venice. So, like, the one in Venice was really powerful because people expected to go to, like, the beach and, like, and the canals, and I'm like, nah! This is the history of Venice. This is redlining. These are the people that have been oppressed. You know, these are the stories of, like, the people who weren't allowed to cross the street before because they were black, you know? Like, and these are the people that are being kicked out, right? So, like, I like to get real with people. And I like it, like, to have even the new people of the community be there, like, oh, shit, I never realized this. Because this isn't popular education.
No.
It's not. So what I'm doing with the Oaxaca California ride is, like, just exploring, like, the questions that I've always had as a kid is, like, why are we in LA? Why is there such a big, like, population of Oaxacans? And why is everyone in LA, like, just, like, everyone, every bar in LA right now has a mezcal dream? You know, like, what was the obsession? You know, growing up, I was ashamed of being Oaxacan because, like, we had to be, like... Mexicans are mean.
We are.
Y'all made me cry. They made my, like, and I'm a lighter skinned Oaxacan, you know, like, my cousin went through some shit, you know, like, we all did, like, for being indigenous, right? Like, people don't. And now those same, like, Chicanx who were doing that are all like, oh, mezcal in Oaxaca.
I'm indigenous,
like,
too.
Taking pictures, exactly.
I saw Coco.
Where was that love when I was a kid and like fucking questioning my identity?
How did you react to Coco? Or like basically when you started seeing that becoming like really popular?
Okay, so like I was in Mexico City before Coco, like before Coco, like. Was out in theaters, and I was actually in Oaxaca during Dia de los Muertos for Coco, which when it was released, and I saw it with my cousin. Seeing it with my cousin and her child was so emotional. It was such a beautifully done movie. Like, it was very, like...
Visually.
Yeah. It was like, respectful of our culture, right? Like, it was... like it felt nice to be seen. You know, like, that's for sure. But before that, I was all like... you know, like in Mexico City, like, oh, they're going to try to sell my culture? And they were.
Disney. They are.
But now my nephew is like, all his parties are Coco, and like he does his face. And
yeah.
He loves the music. He plays a little guitar. I'm like, okay, if you feel seen by it, why would I?
It's not for us.
It's for my mom. It's for my nephews. Like, they finally feel...
We're too woke for our own good.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's a trip, man. I mean, because I've seen... My first time really seeing it that way was when I went to the Mission years ago and I saw it over there. And I was like, fuck these white people. They're just treating it like Halloween and shit.
So that's how I felt it. Like, I saw it
and
being
Hollywood
treated.
Forever. Hollywood Forever, where like it's a fucking contest to have an altar and shit.
Oh my fucking.
And they charge
God.
You like $20 to get in.
I don't know if y'all know, but like Dia de los Muertos is a real thing for us Oaxaqueños. Like my cousin is like, try to get somebody to work on that day. Like, they can pay you 3 times. They will never freaking do it. Nope. Because it's such a significantly culturally thing for us. Like, I remember I grew up. For Halloween, what we went to do is go buy the Dia de los Muertos bread and get the canastas with the fruit and take them to, you know, your comadres, your madrinas, all of that stuff, because that's what you do.
The tradition.
Bring stuff to share with their muertos, right? And it's, for me, like, having grown up with so much death, it was, like, the most important thing. Like, I was always, like, fuck the religion, fuck all these traditions, like, y'all are alcoholics who worship saints
trying
that you
to
have
marry
no
me
idea
over here,
exactly
shit.
What you're doing. But Dia de los Muertos, I'm like, I feel the connection. I know my grandpa's there on the fucking second, and I know my like my little brother who passed away is there on the first. And nowadays I like throw up a blunt for my cousin who passed away, you know, like on the altar. Like, that's what it is. It's the way I feel connected. And y'all who know me, when I pass away, if there isn't a fucking joint out there for me, I'ma come back.
Watch me.
So like for me, it's like it was always like something very important and something I've always felt connected to. And yeah, it's been appropriated like left and right, dude. And I don't know. I'm glad everybody who loves Oaxacan food, mezcal, and the culture. I'm glad. I'm happy. There's other indigenous cultures too. We get it. Yeah. We're colorful and beautiful. And we always have been that way, but there's other indigenous cultures too. Well, please put some respect on their name.
Put some respect on it. Oh, man. Oh, so the ride is on the Sunday, July 14th.
Sunday, July 14th. Yeah, so it's supposed to explode. So it's at 10 in the morning at Union Station Bike Hub. I do that I always try to focus on like, going to places that are bike friendly or that are supposed to be like
easy
resources.
To get to. Yeah.
Yeah, easy to get to. So the Union Station, and the ride is called Explore Oaxaca, California. I was fortunate enough to get the dissertation of somebody who researched migration patterns and who is a voice for Zapotec language, which is our indigenous culture. So like they do exchange programs there. There's like a hashtag and a whole movement to get people who speak the like indigenous language to feel proud of it.
Yeah.
Through podcasts and through like Twitter, it's a hashtag called Usa Tu Voz.
Isn't it? I saw the LA Times article like where it's being taught at UCLA.
So the person who gave me the dissertation is actually, his name is Felipe Lopez, and he's teaching in UC San Diego right now, Zapotec culture. Yeah.
Oh, wait, that was Tongva.
Tongva.
Completely different.
Tongva is native LA tongue. Zapotec is native to Oaxaca. And yes, there's like 20 other languages. This is the most popular.
I've been
one.
Drinking.
Yeah, so.
On an empty stomach.
I mean, and now I'm gonna, like, I have an affinity for language and for learning, so the next thing I wanna learn is Zapotec. Because I was wanting to do Portuguese, and then I was like checking myself on my colonialism, my like love for the colonizer, and I'm like, fuck this shit, like Zapotec, like that's what I'm gonna learn.
What's up? Did you? I think I want to say you did, but did you end up seeing Roma?
Of course, I saw Roma with my mom. I took my mom to see it like the first day it came out.
Like on Netflix or in the theater?
In the theater.
Oh.
It was so cool. It was really cool because.
It's so much more different.
It was amazing sharing that with my mom because she felt seen, right? It was crazy because we bought like the first tickets to go to the first screening. Oh, I did. And I did it with one of my really good friends who is like from Mexico City and like. It really was like having like my mom, the maid, and her mom, the señora. You know, it's really watching it like that. Because my mom and her family, like we have family in Mexico City, who during that time were maids, in like those like, you know, La Roma and like all these like really nice places. There's a lot of stories that we have, like on during that time of it. So, I mean, it
very
really
common.
Just felt like seen, felt like being seen. It was a gorgeous movie, and it really brought to light how racist Mexico is. Because Yarita, my homegirl, like, come on, dude, like, damn, people. Like, did you see some of those comments? Like, that's the kind of shit that came to light that I've always
honestly,
dealt with.
I mean, honestly speaking, as somebody born in Mexico City and growing up with that, that is a privilege because you are... For one reason or another, the dominant like Latin American culture, and I mean, I can't say like guilt-free that I never participated in that. Maybe I did in some way or another, but I can't say like in a specific time I did that. But it's pretty much like just accepted and like the norm.
It's not accepted, it's praised.
You know,
it's really bad. And like colorism affects all of us, right? Like even in my own family, I'm a lighter skinned Oaxacan woman, right? And like
so, I mean,
my experience
like, it
was
goes
completely
down
different.
All of like Latin America from like Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras. Like if you don't say anything that sounds remotely Mexican, somebody's gonna question you and be like, what? Vos what?
Vos what? For
yeah,
real.
Exactly.
They'll stop you. Like, this shit's crazy right now.
You just outed yourself, my guy.
Damn, like, my mom told me that when she was growing up and just traveling, like, through, like, Southern Mexico, like, Chiapas and the rest of it, because, like, we're so south, like, Oaxaca, so south, that, like, you have to.
Yeah.
She got stopped a few times for being, questioned for being Guatemalan. Like, so it's been happening. Okay, so going back to the Oaxacan ride. So, like, the reason
Sunday,
I...
Sunday, July 14th.
Sunday, July 14th, and, like, really come and, like, learn a little bit about why... Oaxacan culture is so prevalent in L.A., and it's become a part of a L.A. culture, right? Like, everybody knows what a fucking tlayuda is.
And if you don't know
Mezcal
that, then I don't know where you're hanging out.
Yeah, what? Where? Who are you? Where you at? Like, you obviously haven't been to any bar in the last however long.
Did you end up going to the Tlatulocos exhibit at, like, the library?
Of course. I was like, that's pride right there. I'm like, ugh, puff chest.
Because,
okay, so Tlacolula is my town, my hometown, right? And so my cousins actually know all the artists, you know, like, not that I really know them. Actually, not to say shit, but one of my cousins got a really fucked up tattoo by one of them. That shit looks bad. I mean, still do my murals, though. Still do my murals in my hostel in Oaxaca. Thank
you. Different medium.
Different medium. That shit is real,
hey,
though.
Hey, man, I got this done by one of the Tlatulocos.
For real, no. For real. Anyway.
Did they get it for free?
I don't know.
Maybe they paid
rumor is, like any other good Oaxacan, get them enough food. yeah, we're heavy drinkers in Tlacolula. We are. No, but that was a really proud moment for me, for my family too. My parents like are really proud that I'm not ashamed of being Oaxacan because that's all we've been taught to do.
Yeah.
And this ride is really cool because I partnered with a 20-year folkloric dance group called Nueva Antequera, who is doing a day in Oaxaca festival at La Plaza de Cultura y Artes.
Oh.
And so the people who join our ride will get in for free to this festival.
And the ride is free, by the way.
And the ride is free. And if you need a bike, we have Metro Bike Share bikes that are also going to be free.
Also, so fuck
just
Metro.
Sign up. Fuck Metro, but they pay for my fucking checks sometimes.
Yeah,
you
give
know,
me my money.
Fuck it. You know, like.
Hey, what's up, man?
I see microphones.
Yeah, we're recording a podcast. What's your name? What's your name?
My American name is Adam.
What's your not American name?
Ara, A-R-A.
All right, and where are you from?
Armenian Lebanese.
Hey, all right.
I work at a Mexican restaurant as well, so.
What do you do there?
I'm a server, bartender, shift leader.
You are the salt of the earth, my man. You are the folk. You're what part of the folks that take care of everybody else going there to eat. Right.
You know, have you? No, I can't say it. I can't say the
you
name.
You don't have to. You don't have to.
Do you know what mezcal is?
Oh yeah.
What is mezcal and where does it come from?
It comes from Jalisco. It's a type of tequila.
Wrong. Wrong. Wrong.
Oaxaca. Oaxaca.
She's
Oaxaca.
She's from Oaxaca.
Dude, I'm Lebanese. The first thing. My coworkers told me you're Oaxacan because I work as a Oaxacan.
Are your
that's
coworkers
true. Every
like
restaurant has Oaxacans working in the kitchen. Really? That is the reality. So doesn't matter if it's Asian food or not.
Do you know about the mezcal illegal?
Yeah, I've been to their bottling plant.
Where is it?
You know, they have the Blanco, the Reposado, and the Añejo for mezcal.
Yes, I know a lot about like the mezcal plants too. The añejo's good though. I mean, I'm all about the pechuga mezcal because that's the way my grandma taught me. All about the breast, you know.
I have plenty of pechuga.
All right, so like one of the things that I wanted to say is like in my town in Tlacolula, like some of the oldest traces of corn, domesticated corn, squash, agave and beans were found there. So like yes.
Oh wow.
Mezcal is Oaxaqueño.
Yes. Don't get it.
Tequila's from Jalisco because they were able to like get a domain for it. That's the only reason tequila's from Jalisco. And they use the same plant. So the agave plant that they use is called the espadín. The espadín is the only agave that could be domesticated. The rest of them grow in the wild. And a lot of mezcal that we see here, so like the Tobalá, the Barril, all of that, has to be like captured and like fetched from nature, from like sides of mountains. Mm. And it takes 7 to 14 years for each one of those to like come to a ripe age.
Yeah, because that's, I mean,
that's the
not
difference between mezcal and tequila.
You're not like farming it. It's not being sustainable either.
It's not.
Damn. So enjoy that bottle of mezcal.
Please do, and pay what it's supposed to be,
yeah.
Right? Like, pay what it's worth.
Pay your artist.
And go directly from, try to buy it directly from the people who grow it and who produce it, because a lot of these brands, what they do, especially now that mezcal is so fucking popular. Like the one homeboy just mentioned, exactly, is like, they go to these small farmers who have been doing this all their life, it's all they know, right? And they just buy it at the cheapest price they can buy it, and like, put a fucking label in it and sell it to gringos like this fool for like 5 times the amount of money, and like the people who are actually producing it, the wealth of knowledge is not getting shit.
No,
so if you do, always go from the artesano, always.
Okay, so the best ride, July 14th, Sunday, 10 a.m. It's free. I want to say if you search it on Eventbrite, you can find it, right?
Yeah, it's an Eventbrite thing. It's a Metro Best, so it's a Metro-sponsored program.
All right. Well, there is. So you can... Is it okay to share your Instagram and Twitter?
Oh, yes. Please follow. Please follow, girl.
So Arely's Instagram is 3 R's, R-R-R-L-E, Arely. And then, this is clever... Her Twitter is the same, 3 R's, R-R-R-L-E-L-A.
And I only did that because RRLE was taken on Twitter for some reason.
You're too late.
God damn it. Anyway, you know who the real RRLE is. And I do that because a lot of people don't know how to say your name. Like, my name is Areli.
But what's like one of the worst pronunciations you've heard?
Orally. Oh, shit. The Irish can't say my name for
O'Reilly?
Shit. O'Reilly. In Ireland, I'm O'Reilly.
Lass. Hey, lass.
Alas, I actually have family. Like, I have a cousin straight from Oaxaca that married an Irishman.
No shit.
I have a little Oaxacan Irish nephew.
All right. I love, I mean, maybe because of like, we're all the working drunks. Class.
Yeah,
like,
drunks working class.
I fuck with the Irish.
That's it. I fuck with Irish too.
All right. Is there anything else you want to share with folks? You know, aside, they know where you can find you. Of course, if you can and, you know, check into your pockets. She's still taking donations for her climate ride fundraiser.
But also just come to our rides. I'm also leading a series of Spanish speaking, Pocho Spanish speaking, bicycle education classes. Yeah, yeah. Like, honestly, like, what you can do is, like, just respect people on the streets, really.
3 feet. Give me 3 feet.
Give me 3 feet.
That's technically the law.
Give me a smile. It is. It's the law.
And you, if for some reason you get caught not following that law, the first penalty is $35.
That's nothing.
And then after that, it's like $90 or some shit. The worst you can pay is like $200.
People don't enforce that, though. It's up to the community like to watch out for each other.
Have you ever seen videos? Or at least I've seen videos where like people put like pool noodles on the side of their bikes, and that's 3 feet.
I've seen that. I've actually seen that in action, like on the coast. Yeah.
I would put something like that would damage your car.
Yeah, I would do something like a spike, you know, like I'm like.
Or you're not gonna give me 3 feet. You're gonna scratch the shit out of your car.
If you see them on the streets and I'm too close and you're too close to me, I'm always like screaming and singing like, if your car it gets damaged, it's your fault. It technically is.
I'm just gonna do this.
Exactly. Oh yeah, I remember we both grew up on Simpsons. Our real parents are the and los cabezones.
The good seasons of the Simpsons.
Shout out to Lisa Simpson, my true and only idol.
All right. Well, thank you again, Areli.
And thank you,
Areli, for making the time to come and having some drinks and just shooting the shit.
I had a good time. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you
right.
for the drinks.
Thanks, y'all, for listening, and we'll see you next time. Well, you'll hear me next time.